John 6:1-14. After this, Jesus came across the Galilee Sea, that is, the Tiberias Sea. A large crowd followed him, because they had been the miraculous sign he had done among the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat there with his disciples. It was nearly time for the Passover, the Jewish festival. Jesus looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him. He asked Philip, "Where will we buy the food to feed these people?" Jesus said, "This is a test for him, for he already knew what he was going to do." Philip replied, "More than half a year's salary worth of food wouldn't be enough for each person to have even a little bit." One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said, "A youth here has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what good is that for a crowd like this?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass there. They sat down, about 5,000 of them. Then Jesus took the bread. When he had given thanks, he distributed it to those who were sitting there. He did the same with the fish, each getting as much as they wanted. When they had plenty to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather up the leftover pieces so that nothing will be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves that had been left over by those who had eaten. When the people saw that he had done a miraculous sign, they said, "This is truly the prophet who is coming into the world." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
And so, as Tandela said, when we come to familiar stories like this, it's important to back up and look a little more deeply, because it's easy to simply say, "Oh, well, Jesus did a miracle. Jesus made sure that everybody had all the food they needed, and that was great for them." But what about us? Because we know that in our world today there is hunger. There is need of every kind. And people still struggle begging and pleading for miracles that never actually seem to happen. And so it's very easy then to read a passage like this and to think, okay, that's great for all those people that were gathered that day, but what does it matter now? It's been said, actually, Diana Butler Bass said this in her blog post just this morning, that sometimes a promise of a miracle can be a seed of doubt and discouragement and skepticism. Because how many times in our lives have we known people who were promised, "Oh, God will do this, God will provide, God will heal, God will make X, Y, and Z happen," and then still someone dies, or still someone loses a job, or still someone goes through some tragedy. And over time, enough failed miracles, and people become more and more cynical, more and more skeptical, more and more doubtful, and begin to wonder if God even really cares at all, if God even exists. Since we have to look at this in a fresh way to understand, one, that God, yes, is indeed still doing miracles, but more importantly, how God tends to do miracles in our world today and what that means for us. And so in order to do that, we'll look briefly at the context in which John's gospel was written. We have to remember that there was never any person that sat down at one time in a year or whatever, took a sabbatical, and just wrote the Bible. It happened over centuries, with many different authors, inspired by God in many different ways, using all of their various different gifts and their various styles of literature and their various contexts and all the different theological beliefs that they brought to the table, some of whom are sometimes arguing with each other. And they compile all of this over many, many centuries. And so when you get to the Gospels, they're specifically telling the story about Jesus, but they're telling it from particular perspectives and they're telling it to a particular audience. And John was written about 70-ish years after Jesus' life. And so at that point, there was already great persecution in the church. The kind of persecution we see in the book of Revelation. The kind of persecution when people who were in the church often could not work, could not get food. Why? Because they were having to separate themselves from the worship of the emperor in order to worship God alone. And when you don't worship the emperor, you don't have a membership in the trade guild. And if you don't have a membership in the trade guild, you don't work. And if you don't work, you don't eat. And so many, many Christians were starving. Many Christians were struggling. Many Christians were facing persecution in many different ways and struggling with very, very difficult decisions, particularly when it came to this very issue of how do we just put food on our table and survive? And John is writing to this audience of people who are suffering, who are being faithful, who are trying to figure out how to live this life and following Jesus and worshiping God, but it's just not working for them, and the miracles aren't happening. And John is trying to tell them and record these stories of Jesus that he himself saw and that others have passed down. And when we tell the story about a particular person, we have to remember we tell it in a certain way, don't we? If you're telling a story about your parents to your kids, well, what story do you tell? Which memory do you bring up? When do you bring up each particular memory and from what angle? It depends on the context. It depends on what you're talking about. It depends on maybe what question the kid asked. Maybe you want to use that story as an example. And so the audience that John is writing to is asking a very important question, which is, how in the world can we continue to be faithful to God when it's going to mean that we're all going to die of starvation and can't function in the world? That's an important question. And John is writing and telling the stories of Jesus to this audience, and he tells this story of the time when Jesus fed over 5,000 people. Now, we don't know all the details of how exactly that miracle happened. Did the bread and fish just magically appear? Did it gradually grow as it spread throughout the crowds? We don't know all of how that worked. But we know the people hearing John for the first time are saying, that's great for them, but Jesus isn't here. Who's going to feed us right now? You can imagine them very much like the people in the wilderness coming out of Exodus in the desert. They had been enslaved in Egypt, and now they were free. They were going to a new land, but they had nothing to eat, and they had no water. And they griped and complained, and we're going to talk about this in several weeks, actually, that they formed this committee, essentially, that said, we want to go back to Egypt because at least there we could eat. We may have been beat, we may have been killed, we may have been abused, we may have been slaves, but at least we had food. And so you can imagine these people now trying to be faithful followers of Jesus long after he's gone, saying, at least before we had food, at least before, yeah, we didn't like worshiping the emperor, we didn't like all the stuff that Rome was doing, but at least we had food. And so in a sense, this story that John is writing of what Jesus does for these 5,000 plus people is a reenactment of a story that they would have been very familiar with in their Old Testament. Little plug for our Old Testament Bible study. It's still relevant. It still matters. And it matters because God is still the one who provides for these people lost in the wilderness, for these people who feel like they never have enough, as we so often do in our world today. And in a sense, we have a story now of a new manna from heaven. The bread of life, who John would later go on to say is Jesus himself. It wasn't about the bread, it wasn't about the fish, it was about Jesus, and it was about God providing directly for the people, just as he did in the wilderness. And it was a reminder to the people in Jesus' day and in the day of the apostles that says God is still at work, just like God was for our ancestors all those centuries ago. And God is still providing manna, and God is still providing quail. And in this case, it's bread and fish, but God still provides, and he's encouraging them to do that. And so then the people say, okay, that's great. We love it. We believe that God provided manna in the desert for our ancestors. Well, this is the core of our faith. And okay, now we can say we believe that Jesus is providing food for all of these people in need, but how? And how do we get our hands on some of it? Because we're still hungry. And you know what? Hungry people don't really care how a miracle happens. They just need food. And so John introduces an element to this story that is not in the other Gospels. All of the Gospel writers tell the story of this miraculous feeding, but only John includes the story of this little boy. This detail that Andrew went and found this child who had a lunch with him, maybe for him and his friends or him and his family. We don't know why all these people were gathered. We know that some of them probably had food with them because they may have been traveling or out for the day. Others may not have had a meal in weeks or months because they just didn't have anything. And just like it is in our day, some probably had more than enough and some weren't sure where their next meal was going to come from. But this little boy was one of those who had probably just enough, maybe a little more than what he needed for himself, maybe enough to share with a few friends or family members. And he gives it willingly to Andrew and to Jesus. And you can imagine the feeling that this little boy might have had. I don't know what good this is going to do. I imagine myself in the shoes of the little boy thinking, well, you know what? Jesus and his disciples, they've had a hard time. They've got to deal with all these people. You know, at least they deserve a break. Maybe they can share it among themselves and at least get a little bit of lunch in the midst of all the work that they're doing. Because he's been healing people. He's been doing a lot of stuff along the countryside. You know, maybe at least he can share a little bit and get his strength back up. I can't imagine that the boy thought that his little lunch would feed the entire multitude of people. But it didn't matter. And that's the beauty of the story. Not once did this little boy say, you know what, I'd love to share with you, but I just don't have enough. How many times in our world is that our go-to? Is that our immediate response? Well, I need to make sure I've got enough for me first. We need to make sure our church has enough. We need to make sure that we're taken care of. And then if we have anything left over, we'll be glad to donate it to a good cause. And when we start with that mindset, how often do we have much left over? Yeah. Because there's always a rainy day down the road. There's always something that we're going to need it for eventually. And so the generosity dries up. Because we always want to make sure we have enough. This little boy said, you know what? I know I don't have enough. But if you can use it and if it can help somebody here, wide open. There was a story that I heard recently. It was talking about the idea of giving a handout to people in need. And they said that they asked the group, they asked everybody in the room, what does it look like to give a handout to somebody? Everybody held their hands out like this. And one person, one older African-American gentleman, put his hand out like this. And the person who was leading the group said, that's it. That's what it means. What's the difference? The difference is when I give a hand out, it's like holding seed out for a bird, right? Or a food for a dog. We allow them to come up. We allow them to take a little bit. But who's in control of what's in our hands? It's always us. We decide how much goes out. We decide what is allowed to be shared. We're always in control. And we feel like then we have power, in a sense, in that situation. And we put ourselves in a position, whether we intend to or not, of power over that other person who is in need. And we say things like, you should just be thankful for what you get. Sorry you're allergic to that thing that we donated to the food pantry, but you know, beggars can't be choosers. We're always in control of what we hand out. When we turn our hands over, as this man did, he reminded us that we never had anything to give to start with. It was never ours because it was all God's. Because everything we have is God's to begin with. I feel like this is the attitude of that little boy. That little boy, I don't see him going and saying, well, you know, here's a little bit of bread. I've got five loaves. You can have a couple, but, you know, I've got six people in my family, and, you know, this is going to make fish sandwiches for all of us. So we can have some smaller sandwiches, but here, you can have a little bit, but let me keep some. This little boy essentially said, nope, none of this is mine to begin with. I am so grateful that I have anything at all. And Jesus, if you can use it, it's yours. And we fully let go. We release control. And in turn, I imagine that little boy had more than enough to eat that day. As did everybody else in the crowds. How did that happen? We don't know exactly. But we do know how it happens in our world today. Because we've seen it everywhere if we just open our eyes. When people release control, when people say, you know what, I will give of what I have openly and generously. And then somebody else sitting near that little boy says, well, if he can give that, I guess I can give a little bit too. And then somebody else overhears, they're getting ready to dig into their lunch. They're getting ready to eat, and they look next to them, and they see there's this family with a little baby that doesn't have anything. And they look over to the other side, and they see that little boy passing his lunch around. And they look back at that baby crying, and think, well, I guess I can give a little bit, too. And by the time you spread that around all those thousands and thousands of people, in whatever way God does this miracle, most likely some combination of natural and supernatural, over 5,000 people are fed with 12 basketfuls of leftovers. You see, in God's economy, there's always more than enough. And in our economy, in our world today, there is always more than enough. The problem isn't quantity. The problem is greed. The problem is distribution. There are a lot of problems and reasons people go hungry. There are a lot of problems and reasons why people don't have enough and why some have far more than they could ever use for generations. We could get into all that and political arguments and economic arguments and everything else, but it doesn't matter. Because God reminds us that there is enough. And that as disciples, it is our responsibility to find those places where the hands are open. To find those places that say, you know what? I'm willing to give whatever I have, even though it's not enough. And see what God does with it. And see how it ministers to somebody else. And see how it helps somebody else's life. Even if it can only help one person. It was worth it. See, there's another version of the story that we tell in our world today. And it's just as much of a miracle, but not a good one. See, miracles can be good or bad. There can be supernatural type things that seem to happen, but they aren't always good. And they aren't always given and blessed by God. This is from Peter Rollins, a biblical scholar who writes this alternative 21st century version of the feeding of the 5,000. And how this miracle so often turns out. He says, Jesus withdrew privately by boat to a solitary place, but the crowds continued to follow him. And evening was now approaching, and the people, many of whom had traveled a great distance, were growing hungry. Seeing this, Jesus sent his disciples out to gather food, but all they could gather were five loaves of bread and two fish. And then Jesus asked them to go out again and gather provisions that the crowds had brought to sustain them in their travels. And once this was accomplished, a vast mountain of fish and bread stood before Jesus, and upon seeing this, he directed the people to sit on the grass. And standing before the food, he looked to heaven, and Jesus gave thanks to God and broke the bread, and he passed the food among the 12 disciples, and Jesus and his friends ate like kings and queens in full view of all the starving people. But what was truly amazing, what was truly miraculous about the meal was that when they had finished the massive banquet, there were not even enough crumbs to fill the starving person's hands. Not exactly the miracle story we want, but it is too often the miracle story we live when we have more than enough. Those people that John wrote to had every reason in the world to want to hoard, to want to be greedy, to want to be selfish, to say, you know, we got to take care of ourselves and our families because we can't even work anymore. And I imagine John essentially in this parable, in this story, in this miracle, reminding them of the way God provides all the way back to Egypt and all the way into the present in Jesus' time. And how God continues to provide, as we see in the church in Acts 2, when all shared everything they had in common and there was no need among the church. And I can't help but wonder if John is pointing the church to these people and saying, hey, look, if you stop trying to hoard, if you stop trying to control how much is shared, if you simply let go and open your hands and recognize that it's all a blessing and a provision from God, and it's all intended for the thriving of all of humanity, then there will be enough. And so open your hearts, open your hands to the Lord. Friends, that's exactly what we do at this table that we call Holy Communion. The whole point in John's gospel was not just the miracle of the bread or the fact that those people got a meal that one day. Okay, that's great for them, but so what? The point for Jesus and for the gospel writer was always to say that this was a sign, to remind them that Jesus himself is the bread of life. To remind them that Jesus is the provision. That Jesus is the source. And when Jesus sat down with his disciples at his final meal, he did exactly what he asked of the crowds that day. And exactly what he saw that little boy offer. When Jesus opened his hands fully and said, this life I have, it's not my own. It was never mine to begin with. God gave me this life, this breath, and I give it now to you freely. And so Jesus takes the bread at the feast, at the Passover meal, and he breaks it. And he gives it to them freely and says, I give you myself, my body broken for you. And he takes that cup and he pours it and says, and I give you my blood, my very life, everything I am, everything I have, so that you may know that you are forgiven and that you are loved, that you are worthy, that you will always not only have enough, but that you will always be enough to the Father who loves you as much as I am showing this love to you now. And I wonder, do we come to church like those crowds gathered that day, spiritually hungry? Yeah, most of us probably had a good breakfast, or if not, we're at least planning a good lunch. But do we come spiritually hungry? Do we come seeking that bread of life? And do we see Jesus in the bread and the juice, giving himself to us freely and being filled with that sense of being enough? Having enough, of knowing that there is more than enough love and grace to go around. Or are there some weeks that we walk out of here feeling just as empty as when we came in? Feeling like there's some crumbs up here at the altar that somebody's going to vacuum up later in the week, and we'll give thanks for that, but we're still hungry. And we're not really sure we got enough of Jesus. And it's not because, oh, it was a lousy sermon that day, or because the piano was out of tune, or because the microphone went crazy, or because we didn't know the song that was sung. But there's something inside that we just feel like, Jesus, I'm not getting it. I see all this bread of life floating around me being passed from person to person. I see all this love and grace in the room. I see the prayers that are going out for people. I see the supplies that are being donated to give to people in need. I see all of that, but I still wonder, is there enough for me? Don't leave here hungry this morning, because there is always enough for Jesus. I've been criticized sometimes for giving pieces of bread that are a little too big for some people to chew. My response is always the same. You can never get too much of Jesus. And so, friends, don't leave here hungry today. There is more than enough. You are more than enough. And what you are given here at this table, you are invited to take forth into the world, just as that little boy did, open-handed. To thank God for the gift that he has given us, and to share that gift with all in our path, to know the love of Christ. And so let us share together in our communion liturgy. You'll find it this week in particular, a modern version in your bulletin inserts. And so may the Holy One be with you.
And also with you.
Open your hearts to the one who is love.
We open our hearts to you, O God.
Let us give thanks to God who takes risks for love.
For the courage of the holy that lives in us, we give thanks.
Throughout history, O God, we have struggled to claim the power you have given us. Destructive forces within and around us make us question your call on our lives, and we turn ourselves over in ways ordinary and remarkable to what is, to what has been, and to the familiar. But you have created us for so much more. And in Jesus we saw a life lived out in all its potential, in all its sacred power, life that is abundant, love that was creative and fervent for justice. And we saw, too, the consequences of living as if the kingdom were so close. And so we wonder,
if we live with such courage, what will we lose?
In proclaiming truths that confront unjust power, do we stand a chance of survival?
How will they go for us if we are willing to risk everything for love?
You have never promised us safety, but you have shown us what is possible.
The Spirit brings new life even to places of death.
Jesus, knowing the dangers ahead, still did not cave to the threats of power or give in to the temptations of the popular. There was nothing he would trade for his love of suffering and betrayed, not even his own life. And so on the night of his arrest, he gathered around the table with his companions, his friends, his beloveds in the struggle, even the one who would turn him over to the cross. And he took the bread, and he broke it, and he gave it to them, and he said, this is my body given for you. Take and eat and remember me. And he did the same with the cup, saying, this is the blood of the new covenant poured out for you, that you may know the forgiveness of sins. And so drink this in remembrance of me. And so in remembering the life of Jesus, we remember what he taught us about ourselves, about the power God has given to us. And we remember that God in the flesh is the good news, the bread of life that feeds, that protects, that heals, that delivers. And we remember the words he spoke, that whoever believes in me will do the works that I have done, that I have been doing. And they will do even greater things than these. And so we pray, pour out your Spirit, Heavenly Father, on this bread and this cup, through these gifts, our hearts may be filled with courage to believe the kingdom is within us, to live boldly in pursuit of love that liberates, and to follow the wisdom that leads from the margins. Blessed be this meal of hope. Thanks be to God.